This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is terrorism expert David Gardenstein-Ross, who is Vice President of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies here in Washington. We want to get his insights into the ongoing investigation of the alleged Fort Hood shooter, Major Nidal Malik Hassan, and specifically his connection to a radical imam who was operating here in the Washington, D.C. area and even had contact with a number of the 9/11 hijackers. He's now reportedly based in Yemen. And David, thanks so much for being with us.
It's always good to join you, Greg.
I'll probably butcher the name, but this imam is named Anwar Aleki, and he's apparently been giving radical sermons even long before he left the United States. What do we know specifically about him and his agenda?
Well, there's quite a bit that we know about him. Clearly today, he's taken to supporting the jihadist movement through his writings, which are extensive, and he does have quite a bit of influence amongst basically young Western Muslims who are oriented or interested in the Salafi jihadi movement. There have been a few cases, including the Fort Dix case, in which people being involved in terrorist incidents expressed their basically their approval and their deep respect for Aleki. That's something that was reported as well for Nidal Hassan. His colleague said that Hassan's eyes would light up when he talked about how he respected Aleki. One of the documents that Aleki recently distributed, recently published, was called 44 Ways to Support the Jihad. It's his own, basically, instructions on how people can help the jihadi movement. And it's also both an indication of where he stands on these issues, and also it provides indication of his own influence throughout this movement in the West.
David, is he out of the country now because the feds were finally onto him, or were the feds not onto him and he just left on his own?
Well, he left the country back in 2002. He left for Britain. He'd been in the United States for a little while. He is a U.S. citizen, born in New Mexico in 1971. He was educated here, including getting a Bachelor of Sciences degree in civil engineering from Colorado State University and getting a master's in education leadership from San Diego State University. So he has an educational background here. Look, it's clear that the feds were onto him at the time that he left. It's not clear that that forced him out, but he was investigated in 1999 to 2000. He'd had contact with three of the 9/11 hijackers, two of them in San Diego, and then two of them in the Washington, D.C. area at the Dar al-Hijra Mosque. There's an overlap in that one of them visited him both in San Diego and also in the Washington, D.C. area. He's mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. He has very extensive ties to a number of individuals who are prominent within the jihadist movement. For example, he has ties to Sheikh Zindani, who's operating out of Yemen, an individual who's been fingered for providing support to the jihadist movement, who ran a foundation that got him listed as a specially designated global terrorist by the U.S. Treasury Department, who claimed that he'd been able to influence and support many terrorist causes, including actively recruiting for al-Qaeda training camps. I should mention that John Walker Lind actually was in Yemen studying with Sheikh Zindani prior to going over and joining with the Taliban. That's one individual who Aleki is connected with, in addition to being connected to the 9/11 hijackers, in addition to being visited by an emissary of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman in early 2000. There's a lot of connections between him and the jihadist movement, which has clearly put him on the radar screen of law enforcement.
David, is it mostly his associations and his general support of jihadism, even against the United States, or do we have evidence that he's been involved in some sort of operational planning at some level?
There's no indication that he's been involved in operational planning. And when I say no indication, I mean there's nothing concrete there that you could bring a case to prosecute him for actually ordering an attack or something of the sort. But you know, there's a lot of connections there to individuals within the jihadist movement. On his website and in his other writings, he's been very strongly supportive of this movement, such that he's often referred to as being a recruiter or a suspected recruiter by people within law enforcement and the intelligence community. There are likely many things there, that haven't been publicly released, I would suggest, because he's certainly a person who is of investigative interest, and he crops up in a host of terrorism cases as someone who the terrorists look up to. My guess is that if he came back to the United States, he would face prosecution under some set of charges, including being an al-Qaeda propagandist could subject him to treason charges. Those are the charges that were brought against Adam Gidan, a convert to Islam from Southern California, who now serves as a major al-Qaeda spokesman, primarily because of his command of the English language. Similarly, Al-Laiki, a U.S. citizen, is very valuable to al-Qaeda and affiliated movements because of the way he's able to explain jihadist concepts in very plain English and to explain things that often are only available in the Arabic language.
And David, we've had so many people in the past week caution all of us not to paint with a broad brush, but what do we know about radicalization within the armed forces? Is there any way to quantify that?
It's difficult to quantify from the outside. You can look at a few of the incidents that have occurred. You can look at the Al-Laiki incident. There's Ali Mohammed, an individual who served in the U.S. military before assisting the Al-Qaeda with some of its terrorist operations in the 1990s. You had the Hassan Akbar incident where he attacked some fellow soldiers with grenades in Kuwait. But these are just a few examples. While there are 15,000 Muslims serving in uniform, I do agree that jumping to conclusion about this, jumping to very strong conclusions, isn't warranted at this time. We simply don't have enough information on this. But I think that in the coming weeks, we'll know a lot more about what the military knew about Nidal Hassan and whether they perhaps should have been looking a lot more closely at him as being a potential source of danger. Now, I should mention that he traded between 10 and 20 emails with Al-Laiki, according to open source information. That's something that I think we'll hear more about because he'd expressed a number of views that were extreme views that were at odds with the mission of the U.S. military. It could well be the case that the military and other investigators missed very clear warning signs, and if so, I think there will be a broader discussion about what that means.
David, unfortunately, our time is up. As always, sir, thank you so much for your time.
Always good to join you.
David Gardenstein Ross, Vice President of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.